It's the right chord.
That's the right chord. Yeah, you got it right
when
this time.
The people that you know don't like you, and your treasured friendships end,
like ours is about to.
Tune into this podcast. We're your artificial friends.
I'll still be your
Hi,
friend.
Josh.
Hi, Andy.
Yes, artificial. And Sam Farmer back with us. Glad to have you back, Samuel.
We're starting off on a sour note already.
they just had the combine.
Yeah.
In my hometown, Indianapolis.
Yep, still going on. I've got my mock draft on Monday. I'm not sure when this podcast will run, but I think I'm going to put Penn State running back Saquon Barkley at the top of the mock draft, which would be the first time in 22 years that a running back has gone first in the draft.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wait. Let me try to guess who the last one was.
He was Penn State, too.
I know it. He stunk for the Cincinnati Bengals. Yep. Kajana Carter.
Yep.
Wow.
Exactly. Good call.
Wow.
Very nice.
Yep.
But that would be really interesting because it's going to shuffle the whole top of the draft because there are so many quarterback-hungry teams out there that are going to be trying to trade up into the draft, and the Browns have two of the first four picks. So they could get a quarterback and
– They go first and fourth?
First and fourth. So they could get the best – player in the draft
and still suck.
Yeah, here's
and still suck.
Well, yeah. For the people that why this started so sour is we had started talking about football before the podcast started, and I mentioned to Andy that I read an article on CBS Sportsline that said the Browns were possibly going to trade the first and fourth pick.
No.
To Indianapolis for Andrew Luck. Yeah, I mean it wasn't a rumor. It was like a couple guys got together.
Just floating.
Said, yeah,
floating
said this is a good
there.
Idea for both franchises.
Oh, I see. So they were the genesis.
Yeah.
Of this.
Well, I think there's going to be more speculation about this draft than most because so many teams need quarterbacks and there are a lot of good quarterbacks now. 35 years after the. Mm-hmm. The best quarterback draft in NFL history, right. 1983.
Could you compare the draft with Roethlisberger, Eli Manning, Rivers?
Yep.
To that.
Yeah, I think you could. I mean, you had obviously Eli going first to the Chargers, then that trade,
right?
Trade to the Giants, which enabled the Chargers to get Rivers and a lot of players out of that. I think Sean Merriman came out
of that
deal. And this could be that kind of year. I mean, everybody wants to hold everything up to the 83 year when you had six quarterbacks go in the first round, three of whom turned out to be Hall of Famers, Elway, Marino, and Jim Kelly. Mm-hmm. We'll probably never see a draft like that again. But what I think is really interesting is if you did have the running back go in the with the top pick, you look at how running backs have affected. Just a couple of years ago, we were talking about the dwindling importance of running backs. But mm-hmm. now, I mean, you look at and Zeke Elliott, you look at Fournette, you look at Todd Gurley, Kareem Hunt in Kansas City. Running backs.
There's the cat in Minnesota that got hurt.
What about Le'Veon Bell?
Yeah.
Le'Veon Bell, Alvin Kamara.
Dalvin Cook.
Dalvin Cook in Minnesota. So you're going to see, and there are also some interesting scenarios where, Cleveland might try to take one player with that first pick, and then trade that number four pick. And
you know whatever they're going to do, they're going to screw it up.
Yeah, but I think they're really going to try to get Cousins.
They're the ones who, at the trade deadline, had organized a trade
for AJ McCarron.
Was it? It was for McCarron. They were going to get.
They forgot to sign.
And then they forgot to fax over.
Yeah.
The paperwork by 4 o'clock.
Right.
What point in time do you just look at them and start feeling bad and just being like, oh, come on, guys. Like you just
20, 30 years ago?
I don't want
ago?
You to win. Just don't look stupid for one time. Just don't do something stupid. And it's like, I feel like no matter how good the player is that they're going to draft, it does matter. He's going to Cleveland. He'll become terrible.
It was funny. A few years ago when the Browns, got off to a better than expected start. I went to Cleveland and had
you mean
coffee
Josh
and donuts. Yeah, or coffee Josh and Gordon's? Donuts with pumpkin head. With that guy, you know, the guy who wears the pumpkin head.
Oh.
Sweet guy. It was a sort of a gloomy, sad pumpkin day. Yeah, we've kept up on Twitter. You know, he's a nice guy. But, you know, his dream before he dies is to go to a home playoff game.
I'll tell you what. By the way, before we continue, yeah. I want to continue this. Do you know what this is?
That's a bottle opener.
And what's that over there in that black? Is that porn?
This is a bottle of beer.
Do you want to open that
yes,
up?
Yes, that's what I just realized. I'm okay. Like, we're way too far into this podcast not drinking. Yeah.
This is a beer episode, my friends. People wait for the... Oh, this is beautiful. This is... I don't think I've ever had it. I've seen it many places.
Yep.
I don't think I've ever tried this. This is Old Rasputin Russian Imperial Stout. Rasputin, the monk... who basically brought Tsar Nicholas and his family down, right? Got them shot. I have that right?
Yeah, you got right.
Never see you die. That's what it says here on the bottom.
That's generally how I understand the story.
That's what I remember.
Wasn't the story that when they got shot, they were like taken down in the dungeon or whatever and just shot with rifles, and they had all the jewels that they were wearing, and I guess a couple of bullets bounced off and they didn't hit them, bounced off the jewels at first, and people are like, ooh, what's going on there?
That's generally how I remember it.
But anyway, Rasputin, quite a fellow. I wonder if he's quite a beer. What kind of beer is this?
I remember Nikolai Ceausescu, but that was a different, you know, was dictator who was shot. Ceausescu?
Yeah, was he a playwright?
He was a dictator.
Wasn't he a playwright before?
Oh, was he a playwright before?
Do I have my dictators?
Despots? your despots?
Hey, call me when all the Russian dictator talk stops, Eric, because I have no idea what you guys are talking about.
We should have a new podcast called Tater Talk. It could be dictators and potatoes.
Here we go.
There's a nice head for you, Sam.
Ooh,
boy, that looks like Turkish coffee. I mean, that is so dark.
Oh, that's a good pour.
That's fantastic. There you go.
Thank you, sir.
Good 1-inch head on that.
Yeah.
That's what she said.
It smells nice.
That's what she said.
Are you ready?
Okay.
Here we go.
Oh, it smells lovely.
Ooh. Whoa.
That's stout.
That packs a punch. What's the alcohol content?
Oh, we should check that. We always should.
9%.
9%. Now, it's good that this is only, 20-ounce bottle? Something like that? Wow.
Ah, good.
Thanks, Josh.
It's a good breakfast beer.
Thanks, Josh, for bringing that by. You know what one of my, and not to take away from Old Rasputin here, one of my favorite beers of all time. One that was a favorite of mine, throughout my 20s. There's a bar in Lafayette, Indiana. I think it's the oldest continuous bar in Lafayette, the Knickerbocker, and it's this beautiful old, everything you would imagine about a beautiful old bar. Big tall windows, a cherry wood, bar that stretches the length of both sides of the room, it's like divided into, and they'd have live music and so forth. Just a beautiful old place. And that's where I found my love of Samuel Smith's Imperial Stout. My God. It almost has a, it's like this, but it almost has a grape. It's almost like a wine.
Have you seen it out here?
You know what? I like checked over here at Circus. They had like one of their porters or something. I haven't seen it lately, and it's the weird thing. You know, I bet might have it as the Vendome up here at Coinga and Riverside. They have a really good thing. Or go to a place like a Total Wine Amore or Bedmore.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But I'm gonna have to seek it out. Anywho, getting back to is Andrew Luck throwing a football?
Yes, and in fact, he was last year. I know there was talk of shoulder problems developing again, this sort of receding from where he had progressed to in his rehabilitation.
A relapse.
That's why I think that he's been hit more than any quarterback
He's been beat to hell
in the last 5 years, right? And so it makes sense to me that they take that Quentin Nelson, the guard from Notre Dame, to protect him, maybe with the third pick if they stayed there. But again, I think enough people are going to try to trade into that spot, so it'll be really interesting to see if, you know, Buffalo can. They have two picks, I think 20 and 21 consecutive picks. Buffalo is going to try to get up there. I think maybe
Jets,
Miami. Jets are at 6.
Oh, they're at 6. Okay.
Yeah. So
the Colts' new coach from Philadelphia. What's his name? It's eluding me right now.
Frank Reich.
Yeah, he's an offensive mind, right?
Yes, he was a quarterback.
Do you think that he is going to come in and be an agent for Luck and help him find the tools? Because if it's left up to Ursayan philosophy, I'm worried about Andrew Luck still.
Yeah, you know, I think that really does help. Frank Reich did good work with Philip Rivers in San Diego. And
I love his architecture too.
Yeah, Frank Lloyd Wright.
Do you guys know the Frank Reich fun facts about, you know, the Buffalo game and everything?
Right.
And you know, but you
against
know,
Houston.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got the biggest comeback win in the history of the NFL.
Right.
Also has the biggest comeback win in the history of the NCAA.
Really?
Yes. That might be different now, but at the time when he did that comeback, he also had like the biggest comeback in history in the NCAA.
I think I can share
and
this.
I remember being like, I don't think wow, I'm that's crazy.
Betraying any trust. I'll share this email that I got from Marv Levy, the Hall of Fame coach of the Buffalo Bills.
Right.
And you can read it because this was during the Super Bowl.
Me. This was during the Super Bowl, you guys.
Yeah.
All right. Hello, Sam. As always, I have been enjoying your Super Bowl week columns that have been appearing this week in my hometown.
Oh, I'm sorry. Could you read that over?
Okay, that's it. That's all I needed to read.
Anyway, anywho.
So, wait, your column is also in the Trib?
It runs in the Chicago Tribune as well, yeah.
I didn't really. Now, will that continue?
Well, it, probably not. When now that Patrick Soon-Shiong is buying the LA Times and breaking it off from Tronc, but we'll probably still have a wire that they can grab the stories off the LA Times wire.
Sure.
And run them, but I wouldn't think that I'd run regularly in the Chicago Tribune, but I have for the last 10 years.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Baltimore Sun.
I know, there's a question I've been dying to ask you, and I haven't seen you yet. I haven't seen you in a while. Are you going to become the official correspondent to the XFL?
You've been dying.
As soon as I found out it's coming back, I'm like, oh, I wonder if Sam's going to be working that beat.
You know, I went to one of the first XFL games. It was the first game, I think it was called the San Francisco Demons or something like that. And a guy, I went to the game and I'm walking out there. Before the game, I was down on the field sort of walking the perimeter. And there was a guy who was dressed head to toe in demon stuff. He was painted his face red and he had horns on his head and, big demons across his chest and the jersey. And I went up to him and I said, okay, I want you to turn around. We were at Pac Bell Park in San Francisco. And I said, don't face the field. He said, okay. And I said, now, name three players on the Demons. And he couldn't do it.
Am I continuing with this? Yeah, is that all you wanted?
No,
that's all you wanted?
No, I wanted
you want
that
to read
part,
that one again?
No.
I've been enjoying your Super Bowl week columns that have been appearing this week in my hometown Chicago Tribune newspapers. This is from Marv Levy, once again, to Sam. I was particularly engaged by the one you wrote about backup quarterbacks, and in reading that column, I've been moved to write to you about a man whom I believe may merit the designation of greatest backup quarterback of all time. Not only that, I feel that he is truly in contention for being recognized as one of the greatest quarterback coaches of all time. I'm referring to Frank Reich, who is currently the offensive coordinator for the Philadelphia Eagles. Quite a few years ago, Frank had just been hired as the quarterback coach for the Indianapolis Colts when Peyton Manning joined that team. Peyton has told me many times about what a tremendous impact Frank had had on his early development. Oh, that's good news. Fast forward a few years, and Frank Reich had moved on to become the quarterback coach of the San Diego Chargers and had taken over the tutoring of their then-rookie QB, Philip Rivers. You know that that guy turned out to be pretty darn good too, don't you? And now Frank Reich is the offensive coordinator for the Philadelphia Eagles, and though his exact title is not QB coach, believe me, Frank is the man who really is in charge of developing the guys at that crucial position. And so the Eagles bring aboard Carson Wentz, who develops swiftly under Frank's direction. My eyes are getting wide. This is great. Into an outstanding player at that position. And now, when an injury plagues Wentz, and the substitute, Nick Foles, returns to the lineup, it takes only a game or two before Frank Reich is able to resurrect that young man's abilities, execution, and career. And so, as far as backups go, allow me to recall some of Frank's playing days accomplishments. It was Frank who was backup to our great Jim Kelly with the Buffalo Bills, led our team to the 1992 playoff season, to the greatest comeback in NFL history. Jim Kelly was injured and out, and Frank led us back from a 35-3 halftime deficit to a 41-38 overtime win. He was our QB the following week when we defeated the Pittsburgh Steelers. Yeah. I love that part. On the road to advance to the AFC Championship game on our way to that season's Super Bowl. Yes, Frank Reich led the greatest comeback in pro football history, and he also, as a backup in college to injured starter Boomer Esiason, led the greatest comeback in college football history by leading the U of Maryland back from an overwhelming deficit to victory over the U of Miami in the Orange Bowl game. And beyond all of Frank Reich's magnificent teaching and coaching abilities, I feel there's much more that qualifies him for a head coaching position with an NFL team. He's highly intelligent, and he's also a person of high character and high ideals. Jim Kelly has often told me how meaningful his teammate Frank Reich had been in helping Jim to develop into the top-notch player and person that he was and is. Frank is intelligent, and he's also a person of high character and high ideals. I like Marv Levy better than I ever have before after reading this. I know. Seems like a really good dude.
Yeah.
He's an outstanding example of how a good citizen should conduct himself, and he's possessed of a personality which leads to his ability to work so well with others. He was a great team leader by both action and example during his playing days. He cared about everyone in the Buffalo Bills organization. He's a wonderful husband, father, and family man. Oh my gosh, Sam, I had no intention when I started this email message to you that I would ramble on this much, and I do apologize for any distractions from this year's Super Bowl prep that I might have inflicted upon you. I'm just campaigning hard to do some NFL franchise the great favor of having them bring Frank aboard for the head coaching opportunity that I feel he so much deserves. Best wishes, Marv Levy.
Wow.
Oh my God.
You have a lump in your throat?
I'm tingling all over.
Wow.
That's fantastic. Yeah. Oh my God.
Marv Levy's a pretty solid guy.
Harvard guy.
Here's why I'm happy about that. Not just about what he said, not just about Frank Reich, who's now the coach of the Indianapolis Colts, not about what he'll bring to the Colts, but what he already has to work with in Indianapolis in the generational talent, the untapped generational talent of Andrew Luck.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Isn't that awesome?
Oh my. You imagine if Andrew Luck is able to achieve his full potential?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. I'll tell you about Andrew Luck.
I was depressed until right
then. Yeah. I got to know John Gruden well as a beat writer in his first few seasons with the Raiders. I was a Raiders beat writer. And had a good relationship with John and have since. And John, of course, went on to ESPN and started doing the Gruden quarterback camp.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at the Combine. No, it was the Super Bowl in Indianapolis, I believe.
Where the Giants beat the Patriots?
Yeah, it might have been that one, or it might have been a combine. I can't say for sure. It was that Super Bowl. I ran into John Gruden, and he said, hey, you got to come out to my quarterback camp. And I said, I will come out when you have Andrew Luck. I want to meet Andrew Luck. And he said, okay, make it that weekend. So I got a call from his producer at ESPN, and he said, hey, why don't you come out? It was a date in March or something. So I went out to Tampa. I flew out on a Saturday. We went out to dinner, Andrew and his uncle Will, who represents him, and John and a couple of ESPN guys. We went out to a steakhouse in Tampa.
Was this 2013?
No, 2010, 11. 10,
11.
Okay. Something like that. And it was funny because we walked in the steakhouse. Everybody recognized Gruden, but nobody knew who Luck was at the time, right, across the country. Unless you were a hardcore college football, right, fan, you wouldn't maybe recognize
You just
him.
Confuse him for a Quaker.
Yeah, exactly. And he was just great. We got up the next morning. I went over at 5 a.m. To Gruden's office, this little hole-in-the-wall office in a strip mall. And we looked at tape, and then Andrew came, brought donuts like at 6 a.m., and they spent the better part of the day taping their show, this Gruden quarterback camp show, and I was just off camera. And then we went to a University of South Florida, which is actually in Tampa, to their football field, and Gruden put them through a mini workout there. And I was so taken with Andrew Luck as a guy, just as a normal, unassuming, interesting guy. But I remember we got piled into a van out of the steakhouse that night, and a couple of girls poked their head in the van, and they said, "Hey, can Andrew come out and take a picture with us?" And so he's a shy guy, but he said, "Yeah, okay." So he comes out, gets out of the van, takes a picture with him. He gets back in the van, he said, "That never happened once at Stanford." It was always two drunk alums, two drunks who wanted to take their picture with me. It was never two girls that wanted.
The thing I love about him, there was a story. I forget where it was. It wasn't an in-depth thing, but they were just talking about how Andrew Luck is such a nice guy and such a sportsman that at the end of a play, you know, some linebacker will cream him, and he'll get up and pat him on the back and say, "Hey, that was a good hit."
Oh, yeah.
He'll say, "Hey, good job. Hey, good hustle."
Yeah.
And they'd turn around like, "Is he fucking with me?"
Yeah, that would piss me off, you know? After a while. Be like,
yeah, no.
It's like, what was that?
There's video of that. You can, you know, there's actually mic'd up video, right, of that. And great job, big boy. You know, like, what?
What was the, I think it was, you tell the story, it's just popped in my head. I don't know what backup quarterback it was, but he like got inserted into the game, right? And he didn't know, you know how they call the cadence, and there's certain keywords they use, and he didn't know them, so he started making stuff up.
Oh yeah, well that was Matt Hasselbeck, okay, when he was with the Colts actually, and he said Andrew is great at dummy calls. I mean, he backed up Andrew Luck, and he said, you know, it's easy spitting out the calls, but it's kind of hard coming up with the dummy calls. And Peyton Manning was the master of that.
Right, because you have to say other things, because if you're saying the same thing all the time, right, they're going to pick up on what,
yes,
what the
So 90% of the stuff that Peyton does at the line of scrimmage, I wouldn't say 90%, but a large percentage of the stuff is disguise.
Misdirection.
And,
yeah.
Misdirection and means nothing. And Matt Hasselbeck kind of ran out of ideas, so he started thinking about what he hears around the house. So he started with, you know, Dora the Explorer, swipe or no swiping. And he said, you could see the defensive linemen who have kids. He said, you could hear see their shoulders shaking. They were laughing.
That's a great story.
Yeah. So that was funny.
Swipe or no swiping.
I got a good Steelers story. The Steelers, this was back when Jim Haslett was their defensive coordinator and Bill Cowher was their coach. Mm-hmm. And Haslett just called this great game, and it was a big game. It might have been Monday night game or Sunday night game, and it was just a defensive gem that he called. And toward the end of the game, Cowher said, "Okay, Jimmy," to Jim Haslett, defensive coordinator, had been calling the game the whole time, said, "You call it from here. Bring it on home. You call it from here. Land that plane." And Hazlitt said, "What's he talking about? I've been calling the defense the whole game." And somebody said, "No, coach, he's mic'd." So, he wanted it known that he had been calling the defense.
That's great. Oh God, I love it.
Yeah.
So,
I had a funny story happened with my dog the other day. I got to tell this.
By all means, quickly to wrap up the combine thing. So you guys already do a mock. Who will you get together with to do this mock draft? This is the NFL draft that happens, what, last weekend of April?
Yeah. Well, and it's going to be in Dallas this year.
In Dallas, time. And you guys will run through it.
Yeah.
We've talked about getting together with Rex Lynn and trying to do it
in real time. Yeah, a couple years ago we went and watched it.
Oh, God, it was the funniest.
That was fun. Hilarious.
He is just so great to be around. He's a big Dallas fan.
Right.
And he was just cursing the TV the entire time. But it'd be great to watch him when it's in Dallas this year. So already it's March. You guys will work out where you think everybody's going to go. And then God knows what actually happens on that day when people do trades and so forth. But do you think the Cleveland's going to take number one overall?
Oh, take Barkley?
You're gonna,
you think they're going to keep the pick?
Well, I think a lot will happen in between now, and you know, you'll have risers and fallers, and people are going to have their pro days. And basically what I do is I talk to scouts or personnel from every single team. I do that every year, and I already have talked to people. I talk to beat writers, too, on every team, people who know the teams the best. Then I make up little cards of my top 100 picks, people I think have any chance of going in the first round. And it's a little cut index card in half, and I have red for offense and blue for defense, and then some factoids and then a little picture. And then I set up, and then I clear off our kitchen counter, our island, and I set up. It drives Paige crazy, but I go through and
he's got your own little war room.
Talking to scouts, everything. I'm constantly moving this player here, and I create a live draft board, and then from time to time I'll take a snapshot in time and I'll do a mock draft, and I might do three or four heading into the main one, and then the night before the first round. Or the day before the first round, I have the bed in the hotel, and I do my final mock draft on that.
So your mocks, like, is it based on, like, what you think's going to happen, or what you're kind of hearing?
Oh, well, both.
Both, yeah.
Both, yeah. And what would be logical, and... And I've done pretty well over the years. There are people, there's a site called Mocking the Draft where they rate people. And I finished in the top 10, and there are 500 mocks at various times. So,
yeah, you know what?
Because usually your intuition is awful.
Yes, exactly. And everything, in every other aspect.
And I don't even look at those mock drafts anymore, because I think sometimes those guys don't even believe what they're saying, because they just want to get the click and the link or something. You know what I mean? They want their draft to look different, and they want they want people to click on it and just be like, oh, he's saying that. That's crazy.
Well, what I always said about a mock draft is a mock draft is like your child. You'll nurture and do everything you can, but at some point you have to let them go out and fail on their own.
So now, do you commentate on this somewhere, or are you just are you going to be live tweeting or whatever?
Yeah, I live tweet during the draft. I go to the draft every year, and I have my mock, and then I have three things going at once because it's on deadline. So I've got my story that's going to run in the paper the next day, but I've got to sort of write that as it's going along. And then when a pick is made, I will tweet, I will go to a live blog that goes to latimes.com, and then I'll compend it, you know, as part of my main story. So it's kind of crazy. The first round goes by lightning fast for me because so much is going on, and you have so many responsibilities. I can't even get up and go to the bathroom.
So you're in your hotel room doing this?
No, I'm at the draft.
Oh, you're at the draft.
At
doing
the
this.
Draft.
Okay,
because yeah.
I pictured you in your boxers. Going out, sending these
pizza boxes on the table.
A bottle of vodka. On
it's
side.
Comforting. Exactly. It's comforting to know you're thinking of me in my underwear. Right? Yeah. No.
So fun. I'm well, that's awesome.
Draft. Yeah, and then they'll have the top, say, 20 guys who are invitees that come to the draft.
And they'll be available?
And they will be at the draft, and they'll bring them down. You know, it'll be Myles Garrett is down in the interview room right now, and then you'll hear, you know, whoever.
Who's
number
be-
three pick is down in the interview room. And so you're sort of deciding whether is it more important for me to go to that guy right now and,
right.
and listen to what he has to say or pay attention to exactly what's happening.
You know what my favorite part is, and they've just been, it seems like they've been focusing on this like the last 3 or 4 years, is they have that one kind of green room with the like 10
oh,
or
yeah.
15 invited guys.
Oh, there's a table?
Yeah, and yeah, then yeah. and then all of a sudden it gets like to round like to pick 23, and a guy that was supposed to go in like the top five is still just sitting there by himself.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They keep checking in, like, oh my God, right. it's so uncomfortable.
Oh, totally uncomfortable.
Eventually, he just gets so pissed, he walks up and like goes in the back, and you know, yeah. you know he's just swearing.
And I was there when Aaron Rodgers in 2005, when he was there, waited all the way to the 21st or 24th pick or whatever the Packers
Crazy.
Took him at after, because it was really. Between Aaron Rodgers and Alex Smith, who's going to be the number one pick. Another interesting thing that happens right off stage is you've got a guy with a jerseys and
oh, yeah.
a press.
And the names on them.
And puts the names on them right away so they can – I mean, those are literally hot off the press.
So,
oh, wow.
I was always wondered how they did that. So they have all of the names.
They have the names and name
And then
plates.
They just have to take the appropriate jersey and smack it on there. And
right.
then put. But don't they also have to – have several sizes of each jersey, or I guess they only hold the thing up. They don't need.
Yeah, and those aren't
just a
real. Those aren't the real NFL jerseys that the players wear. Do you ever see like a real NFL jersey?
Right,
it looks. You can't wear it like out because
right.
it's got like the elastic.
The
it's got no
and,
armpits.
Yeah.
Right,
just, it's like a
those
weird.
Those jerseys cost. You know to. For instance, the Baltimore Ravens, I think, have 6 full-time seamstresses on staff for sewing up jerseys. That's why it's an issue with players swapping jerseys at the end of games, because those jerseys are tailored. Particularly defensive linemen want to have a jersey that's just shrink-wrapped.
Oh, see, I always figured they got, like, each player got, like, 6
no.
of each jersey. You know what I mean? It's
they'll
like you only wear two. You know,
they'll give them two. It's a real problem, especially a quarterback giving away his jersey or somebody who has a very tailored jersey.
Running
that.
Backs and quarterbacks,
and
because they try to – the reason they make it so tight to the skin, so tailored, is because they don't want a defensive end to be able to grab
yeah,
it
yeah.
with their as they're running so, by and pull
yeah.
them down.
And those players are billed. If they give away their jersey, they have to pay $300 to give that away. So you see guys who are swapping jerseys every week.
Yeah,
and
I'm sure they're not too worried about
they're
that.
They're not too worried about it, but,
yeah,
but
that
it,
was, exactly.
teams
that was,
don't like it.
The time
all
they
the team doesn't
yeah.
like it because
no,
it's
because
the
it
ass.
Took them so long to
right.
to tailor that specific jersey and so and fix up men's jerseys and everything. So it, having a game worn jersey is a big deal. But if you're a guy like Adrian Peterson, you're going to be swapping that every week.
So like when Mean Joe Green got that coke from that kid
yeah.
in the
mm-hmm.
hallway
yeah.
and he says, hey,
that was
kid,
a true story, by
catch.
The way.
He tosses it to him. It was a real sacrifice that Mean Joe gave him.
And they build him. They build him right there on the spot. If you see in the background, there's somebody right up the hill right behind him.
There's a seamstress.
Yeah. Yep, yep, yep.
Oh, heavens. Well, anybody that's used to us talking about sledding and bourbon.
Yeah, exactly.
Is probably wondering what the hell we're talking about now. But you were telling me that you had something with your dog.
Oh, yeah. This happened the other day, and Paige is going to die that I'm telling this on on the podcast. But
Paige is his wife.
Yeah. I've been trying
like,
to eat.
We like a lot better than him.
Yes. Well, you're not the Lone Ranger. I've been trying to eat healthier and have actually dropped some weight from since the Super Bowl. And but what it's getting me a little gassy. And I'm sorry. Sorry, Mom. Sorry, Paige, in advance here. We've got this little dog, Lucky, this little rescue dog. Cutest little. It's a mutt, but it looks like a little Westie Terrier, and it's a puppy, but weighs 4 pounds, so tiny. And it was cold in our house the other day, so I stayed in bed a little longer, kind of curled up under the covers, and Lucky burrowed down under the covers and right, like tucked under my butt, like between my legs. And, you know, I was, I felt a little rumble, and, you know, I expelled.
Expelled.
Yeah. So I farted. And Lucky, I immediately, and it was partly an experiment because I wanted to see how he would react. Lucky immediately jolts up, you know, is disoriented, jolts up out of sleep.
Angered.
Looks. You know, burrows back up to the covers, stares at me out of the thing.
As if to say.
Now, gets out of the covers and on top of the bed sheet on the comforter and vomits.
Where the people that it's not gonna get any better than that.
Oh God. Oh, I'm crying. Now, when you vomited, did you just start laughing? Or you just
is that actually happening? And I crawled around and I was like, God.
Like, I took my jacket off.
Yeah.
That's the hardest I've laughed on this podcast so far. I did not expect that.
That's fantastic.
Oh, I'm still laughing.
No, for whatever reason, when you said that, it was it brought a line of all people that Gallagher said like 30 years ago when he had his kid for the day. He had his son and he was carrying him around and he was trying to put him back into the car. They were leaving a supermarket or whatever. He said, and as I did it, I was putting him in and I hit his head on the roof of the car as I was doing that. And I felt awful. I'm expecting him to cry. And you know when he looked at me? He didn't cry. Didn't make a sound. Just looked at me with a look that said, are you really that fucking stupid? And then he smashed a watermelon. Good.
That's
God. I remember Mikey, producer Mikey.
Uh-huh.
He would, I believe if I'm remembering this correctly and quoting it warmly, had a dog that they used to get on the bed with him. But the dog would go out and have, it was elderly, and would have dog dingleberries. And so he would have to get, wet wipes. Before, when the dog wanted to get up on the bed and clean the dog so that they could relax and enjoy the dog's company.
Oh, do you remember the story I told you about the trifecta on the morning show?
No. I assume you don't mean the grilled cheese the counter.
So, all right, one time, this was, Owen was like 2, and me and my wife, we have tile floors all through the bottom half of the house, and we were in the kitchen, and it was like we were having a serious conversation. It was like one of the very few serious conversations that we've had in our life. And we were talking, I remember it perfectly. We were talking about school. school, like what school he was going to go to, something like that. And Owen, he was right in the process of also learning to use the potty and everything.
Right.
So we're just standing there in the kitchen and, you know, we're talking and he comes walking in and tugs on my pants and I look down and He's like, "Daddy, Daddy." I go, "Hold on, buddy. Me and, you know, Mommy and Daddy are talking. I'll be with you in a second." And he's just, and he's like, "Daddy." And I'm like, "No, hold on." So he turns around, walks back in the living room, wait a couple minutes, and all of a sudden he comes walking back in, and we're still talking. And I look down, and he's got this look on his face, and he's just like right about to start crying. And I look, and he's got shorts on, and he's got diarrhea running down, running down the inside of his leg. And what I do, I go, and point at him because I'm such a great father. And my wife's like, "Oh." So she grabs him, and we go walking out, and he like tried to go to the bathroom but couldn't make it, so he'd like basically just dripped the diarrhea all across the tile of the living room, through the dining room, into the kitchen. And I'm like, so I think okay, let's go get the spray to clean up when the dog poops on the carpet. So I'm like, it's poop. Let's go get that spray off to wipe all the stuff up. So I go upstairs. Owen's crying. It's just mayhem, and I'm gagging. I'm like, and I get upstairs, and the dog pissed on the floor. So I'm like, son of a bitch. So I go, okay, the pressing problem now is the pee on the carpet. The poop's not going to soak into the tile. It's going to be there.
Sure.
Now I got to get this pee. So I go get the bottle to clean the pee, clean up the pee, come walking downstairs, and as I'm walking past the poo, I look over, my dog looks right at me and just goes, and vomits on the couch. And I screamed, "The trifecta!" Yeah. At that point in time, I was just like, what else could happen? What else could happen? There's piss, puke, and poop all at the same time.
It gets to a point where you're like a reed in the water. You just got to bend with it.
Right. As I'm like, I'm just stop moving and don't talk, and maybe all the pee and poop will stop happening. I don't know what's going on.
By the way, here in my studio, guys, look over at the by the door. Do you see something special?
Vacuums?
Ooh. Yeah. Not one.
Two.
Nice looking ones, too. The Dyson one on the right, that one's about 15 years old. It's being retired. It's being put.
Oh, you know what I wanted to? I needed to talk after the show. Can you go show me your vice?
Oh yeah, you. Now, hold on.
I'm so jealous.
I did an episode about the vice with Larry.
Yeah.
Yep.
And Larry couldn't have been less interested.
Oh, you should have waited for that.
It was like I held a turd under his nose. He was so offended by it, he couldn't care less.
I was thinking about it in bed last night. I swear to God. I was like, I have to ask him if it has that anvil attachment. Does it have I'm like, does it have a pipe clamp?
A pipe clamp?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it does.
Yeah.
In between the jaws?
Yeah.
I believe so.
Those are great.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's fantastic. Dude, it is amazing.
The only thing that I think you described it that I'm not sure I would go for is the color.
The blue?
Yeah. I went red.
Well, it was the color that they had.
So then,
I went for features first, for show.
So here's how my brain works. So I'm laying in bed thinking about that, and I go, and I think, I wonder if it has the anvil attachment. And then my next thought, I swear to God this is all true, my next thought is, why aren't there any anvils in cartoons anymore?
Because it's horribly violent.
Right, well, yeah.
Dropping cartoons an anvil on someone's head.
Cartoons sometimes suck you just hand days. An anvil to somebody who's just gone over a cliff.
Yeah, you can figure out different ways. But an anvil was like a big thing in cartoons when I was a kid.
Silas is being shown some of those old Looney Tunes cartoons by my father-in-law. And, I have a love-hate relationship with it. It's like, I experienced a lot of that growing up, and look how great I turned out.
Yeah, you didn't want to jump off a cliff.
But the phenomena that they were phenomenon. Hey, what was that movie that John Travolta was in?
Xanadu.
No, it also had what's his name? Robert Duvall in it, and he John Travolta got this power where he could move stuff around.
Is that what he's like? This,
oh, the, right.
Yeah. What was the name of that movie?
I don't know.
Phenomenon.
I really didn't know. I'm like, oh, I don't know. Yeah.
Anyway, where was I? Oh, the phenomenon that they were examining was the fact that like Wile E. Coyote and others don't realize that they've run off a cliff. They don't. Gravity doesn't work until they realize. Yes,
right.
That, oh, they look down.
Right.
Yipes, and then they fall.
They worked a lot with a lot of explosives too.
Oh,
a lot
God.
Of rockets.
Oh God.
I don't know where you can get those rockets.
The dynamite that Wile E. Coyote would
they just stick a gun
get they from just, from Acme.
Oh, they just shoot him, and Elmer Fudd would just shoot Daffy Duck in the face with a shotgun.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, and not even like from like 8 feet away, like point blank. He just walk right up there and shoot him in the face.
Oh yeah, and then what was it? Daffy when he was playing Friar Duck. When had the quarter staff,
yep.
He's like thrust, parry, dodge.
No, that swerve. That was Bugs Bunny, wasn't it? That was Bugs Bunny.
But Daffy was in it. He was Friar Daffy or Bugs was Robin Hood.
Oh right, that's a great one. Yeah. That's a good one. All right. We can't start talking about cartoons again. We've already done this.
But you There's mentioned so much Woody Woodpecker. Woodpecker. Those are great cartoons.
I know. I brought that up. Where did he go? He's gone. He's not even like you don't even see him. Anywhere.
They used to have a little song in L.A., Cartoon Showtime. It's sort of strange now to re-sing. Like, Cartoon Showtime, Cartoon Showtime, here comes Woody.
I'm going to sing that tonight on my way to bed.
quickly, my son has come up with a comic book character, a superhero,
right.
With his schoolmates. And I would share it with you, but I don't want to talk about it now and let someone else
steal it.
But if I say it on this podcast, is that technically, it's recorded. Is that technically copyrighted?
Is this like that thing where you can, like, if you write a song and you write the lyrics
you
and then you mail them to yourself?
Now, that's the poor man's copyright. That doesn't make sense.
Okay.
But if you record it and you have proof of the time that you recorded it, then it is copyrighted.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. So should we
go ask Silas first
All right.
March 3rd, Saturday, March 3rd at 12:35 p.m.
All right. He's come up with his schoolmates. Then, they're sending him to USC Film School with the lawsuit that we'll file. But thank you for saying that, Josh, about the vice, because it's a big part of
important part of your family now.
It's an important part of my family. We'll go and we'll check it out. You know what I might do for you? Oh,
what?
I've been promising Silas I'd do this with him. Have you seen on the internet electric companies hate you knowing about this?
Oh, yeah.
And it's like a picture of a wire around a nail. Like, electric companies hate that I make a science fair electromagnet?
Right.
What are you talking right. about? I don't know what that's about. It's about solar or whatever it is. But anyway, I promised him that I would help him make an electromagnet. So I went to Anawalt over here and I got a battery, lantern battery.
Right.
Like Sam thought I needed for the for the guitar. One of those lantern batteries and a box of 20 penny nails. And I had wire here. So we made an electromagnet yesterday. Rainy day, and it was fun, And picked up some paper clips and stuff with it and actually magnetized the nail and whatever. But I think I told you, or maybe I told Larry about it. I guess I told Larry about how I have distinct memories of some of the tools that I now have of times with my dad.
Yeah.
And you remembered for us very vividly when your dad made you a battleship
right,
out of 2x4s and nails.
Yep. and one dowel.
These are the kind of nails that would do that.
Right.
I remembered when my dad took a nail and took a sledgehammer and on the vice anvil, right, flattened out the end of it and filed it down on the grinder to make a tiny knife.
Yeah, you told. I remember
6-year
that.
Old totally Andy. That. I might use the vice to do that after this program. Oh. Oh, and give that call to you, Josh.
Great call. Those little things that stick with you. I remember my dad was my dad is a physicist, still living, and he would bring home stuff from IBM and early lasers. He would actually bring home a laser.
Really?
Yes, which my brother was caught shining in the light of in the eyes of oncoming drivers down our street. but that's and that was a big thing. But
statute of limitations has to be over on that.
My dad brought home an oscilloscope.
And it was right over here.
But it was a big boxy oscilloscope. But I remember spending hours watching that squiggly line and compressing it and stretching it out and also, he'd bring home telescopes.
Did you guys? We were talking about you getting your knife. Did you remember? Did your dad ever just give you a knife, like as a gift, like
why
to have?
My microphone. What's going on with my mic?
I don't know. Something's
did
wonky.
We lose some power. La, la,
la, la, la, la. Oh, looks like something's gone wonky.
How's that?
That microphone is the Frank Reich of backup microphones.
Look at that. that's probably horrible to do hot swapping like that. Shouldn't
hot
have done it.
Hot swapping.
Hot swap.
Did you ever get like a knife from your dad? Do you remember like the first time?
I did.
You did? Do you remember that?
It was a single blade little wood and nickel buck knife, just a little tiny thing, like 2 inches.
I mean, and I'd carry it around.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Swiss Army knife.
Now I'm like, I don't even want one near me because I'm afraid I have to go through some metal detector, and then if they find a Swiss Army knife on me,
you'll end up in Guantanamo.
Exactly.
You remember?
My granddad gave me this was actually before they were big as a Swiss Army knife. They went over to Europe, and he revisited a lot of like the battlefields and stuff that he was at over there. And he brought back a Swiss Army knife. And this was before they were big, right? And he's like, this is really – he sat me down. He's like, this is really sharp, so you'd be really careful. And I'm like, oh, absolutely, granddad. 30 seconds later, I mean, it wasn't even 30 seconds. I slashed this big cut across my knuckle, and I was so scared that they were going to take the knife that I immediately like closed it up, ran to the bathroom, and like just bleeding into the sink, and like put a Band-Aid on it, and just like kept that hand in my pocket for the rest of the day, just because I was like, I don't want them to take this knife from me, and I can't show them that I'm like Ralphie from Christmas
right.
Story.
Just yeah, put your eye out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I remember playing that game where we throw a screwdriver into the ground and then you separate your feet, you know, and you throw it between the guys. Oh, it's crazy.
Mumbly peg?
Yeah,
is that what it's called?
Yeah, that's
mumbly peg is where you put your hand out and you do the knife.
Yeah. I just brought to mind, I remember being at the Providence Airport, and this was early after 9/11, and I was going through, I had carried on, but you had to put your stuff through the toiletries out of the bag, and so I had my dop kit, and I put it in, and the guy made me break off the little sharp thing on the end of a nail clipper.
The little scraper,
which you don't even use, made me break that off. But I do remember, I don't remember if it was this time or another time, but he said, and it was very crowded and sort of an embarrassing setting, he said, sir, your shaving bag is vibrating. And then I sort of panicked,
just
and
like
I realized
up,
it was one of those
everybody
razors, you know, that has a yeah. I
sure
made sure everyone in line knew.
Here it is. It's okay. We're good.
It was this. It's a razor. It's a Gillette razor that has a battery.
I'm turning it off right now.
I remember I was doing some VO. I was doing a commercial campaign. And we're in there recording this. One of the guys that was one of the writers, copywriters for this agency, was in there, and he had just had surgery on his ankle, Achilles tendon surgery. And he was talking to coworkers, and he had been on crutches. They said, you should get a cane. He's like, no, I don't want to get a cane. They're like, why not? He said, because crutches say temporary. Cane says I'm permanently infirm, right?
Right.
Because I don't want to do it. He goes, but then I started thinking about it. I'm like, well, you know, there might be some cool canes out there. There might be conversation started. So he goes on eBay and starts looking at different canes. And he finds one that he thinks is cool, and it's like, wow, that's awesome. So he buys it, has it shipped to his workplace, his office. And they're in this agency, this advertising agency, and they're all gathered around for this meeting with the president of the company. And they're sitting around there, and this FedEx package comes in, and you know, this long tube. And it gets delivered to him, and they start with the meeting, and the president says, what is that? What's in there? And he's Indian, of Indian descent, and from the country of India, not the mm-hmm. Native Americans. And this is like 2003, 2004. And he's like, oh, it's a cane that I bought on eBay. Well, can we see it? You have a look at it? Like, yeah, I guess. And he opens it up in the meeting and pulls the thing out there. And it's this long metal, you know, ornate cane. Looks pretty cool. And he's like, let me see that. Passes it around to him. He gets to the president of the company. He takes it. He's like, hey, this looks like shing. Pulls out a 2-foot blade. There's a knife in it. He's like, oh my God, if I would have pulled that out at an airport, I would be.
Oh, yeah.
They would throw me, yeah. They'd send me to Cuba and throw away the key.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Wow.
So the old cane knife.
Yeah.
Don't make
it like that. I hate when that happens.
Don't make it like that.
Old cane sword.
Anything else? Anything we want to cover today?
I put new locks in on my house.
Did you really?
Last Sunday. Basically, the very worst thing that could happen to you when you're putting in locks happened to me. So I was installing locks on two doors, right? And we wanted, basically the front door is two separate doors and it needed three deadbolts and a doorknob, right? And the back door needed one deadbolt and a doorknob. Well, they only sell things in two. Yeah, sure. So I had to buy a set of two doorknobs, two deadbolts, and then one deadbolt and another deadbolt. So when I went there and I got it, they only had like one deadbolt that matched the original kit. So I had to buy like different locks. Anyway, I'm putting all these locks in and I finally get them done. And guess what I did?
Lost the key.
I was furious. I literally was screaming. I'm like, this is the absolute worst thing that you can do when you're installing a lock is lose the key. You haven't even tried it yet, and I cannot find the keys.
Well, when we moved in here, we had the big security doors on here because whoever lived here before was
like the metal ones.
Yeah,
that's what I'm talking
crazy
about. That's
enough.
Why I had to.
So let's see, we had and there were this quick set, you know, locks and deadbolts. Let's see, total, so double doors on each of them. Uh-huh. There were one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10, 11, 12. 12 locks on, operated by one key.
Yeah, okay. On how many different doors?
Well, it was three entryways, right? Front,
so
back,
there was like
and
four
the
locks on all
but,
three.
But there was a regular door, and then there was the security door outside of it. So two, three, four, four per door. So we got rid of one by one these unsightly security doors and just put in new doors, new nicer doors. And have anyway, when we just finished the kitchen remodel this last fall, I took off the last security door off the bedroom here. And look at that door. It's a tank. And replaced it, the locks on it, and found a lock maker that has smart keys where you can put in one lock, set of locks, and then put in another set of locks, and you can use the key from the other one and rekey the lock on the next one to use the same one. So they all work on the same. So the kitchen and the bedroom both work on the same lock.
How does that work?
Well, you put in the key that you've got, then you stick in another thing,
Okay, I saw these when I was looking at them, and they were expensive.
Twist it left and twist it right, and then you pull it out, and it's now rekeyed to go with the other thing.
Right.
So totally redid that, but it's actually pretty cool.
You know what I did too when I was putting these keys in? You'd have been proud. That security door, that metal frame, right? The deadbolt wasn't lining up on one of the locks.
Right.
So I went and got a file.
Nice.
And my work gloves, and I just manually ground down that hole until it smoothly fitted. It never worked since we moved in. I just said, enough of this crap. I'm fixing this thing. Spent like 45 minutes out there and in like a confined space, like just grinding.
Nice.
Yeah. What do you think of those locks now that you can lock with your phone? Have you seen?
Well, we've got on the laundry room, we've got a keypad.
Okay.
So it's just a matter of having a Wi-Fi or Bluetooth or whatever.
Right.
Well, the problem is the Bluetooth. I mean, if somebody connects to your Wi-Fi system, they can unlock your house.
I would guess, yeah.
Yeah, well, that scares me.
Yeah, but if somebody can afford the equipment to break into my Wi-Fi, do they really need the crap that's in my – they need the spatulas that I've got?
That's true.
go rob a bank for crying out loud.
Come in and steal my vintage Nintendo games.
Yeah. Seriously. Get a job. Go kiss a girl.
So what do we think of this beer?
I like it all right. I would have – it's a beer I would have one of.
It's I got a little bit of coffee flavor.
There's
in
coffee, mm-hmm. Yeah. There's it's a little bit of a burn, like a woody.
Yeah, that's smoky, like
smoky,
a, yeah.
Smoky. That was the word I was looking for. Okay. Smoky. Sam, so great to see you again.
Yeah, I love being back. It's so great.
And people can get a hold of you where?
LA Times Farmer on Twitter, or my email is sam.farmer@latimes.com.
The beer made me surly.
Email me, people listening, any beers you want us to try, anything you want to talk about, want us to talk about, you can email me at joshuajfligger@gmail.com.
And on the website, on the Facebook page, Your Artificial Friends, you can put suggestions and stuff up there. People have been doing that. And
we read those daily.
And I won't go into details, but somebody had it.
Did you see what I posted up there yesterday?
The beer holster? The shower beer holster?
The shower beer holder. I was like, it just justified all of my beliefs in shower beers.
That's fantastic. Yes. So by all means, reach out that way. You can reach me on Twitter, Andy_Chanley. And I am currently doing a little residency at 88.5 FM here in Southern California again at KCSN.
And you can listen to it online.
Around the world at 88.5fm.org. It's so much fun.
Yeah.
The music that I'm playing is, I've never been able to play it anywhere else.
Yeah.
You know, to really go deep and
they got a really good playlist over there.
It's fantastic. It's fantastic and nice people. Mm. So I'm really enjoying the hell out of it. But and then Larry, I don't know. Where
Larry Morgan, whatever. Yeah. Poor Larry.
We're so mean to him.
When the people that you know don't like you, and your treasured friendships end. Tune into this podcast where your artificial friends.
Let's go check out that Vice. All right.